Welcome to everyone listening. I'm Carmen, and this is my horse heart. When I lived in Montreal, I went to an elementary school called Willingdon. And if anyone had listened to my interview with Victoria Corsos not long ago, she was also a Willingdonite. And that has wonderfully connected me to some other people who I went to school with, including today's guest, Miles Kroll. And it's been so long since I've actually seen his face and spoken to him. So this is really fun for me, and I hope everyone enjoys this interview as much as I'm sure I will. Welcome, Miles.
Welcome. I'm here. Good to connect with you, Carmen.
Great to have you. I'm so happy you agreed to do this.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm pumped up.
Could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yeah. Where to begin? That's a good question. Right now, I'm here in Montreal, Quebec. I'm a personal trainer. I have my own fitness studio where over the years I've built out a team of personal trainers where we collectively work together, helping people get in shape and become stronger and healthier and happier. And I've been pretty much doing that for the last 10 years now. And that's been the focus of my life for the last quite some time.
How did you get into that?
That's a great question. It actually all started, I can pinpoint it exactly, when I was 14 years old. That was about the time that I stopped playing team sports. Growing up, I played a lot of different sports, and I played soccer primarily up until that point. Around 14 years old, I stopped playing soccer, and I didn't have a physical activity to do anymore. And it was my mother who pushed me to join the local YMCA and start working out. And from there, that's where I started my training journey. And about 2 years in, I met a trainer who then became my mentor, whose name was Wagner Rouley, who at the time, when he was in Montreal, he no longer lives here, was kind of one of the go-to trainers. So when I was 16 years old, I became certified actually as a personal trainer. He was also the teacher for the YMCA personal train certification. So that's kind of where my journey began, at the YMCA with Wagner when I was 14, 15, 16 years old.
Wow. And how did that evolve into doing your own fitness program and your own gym?
Yeah, that was quite the evolution, actually, because I had no concept at the time how things would play out or what road I would end up going down. But pretty much what happened was I got into fitness at that juncture at 16 years old when I became certified. I started transforming my body more and more and slowly but surely working with other people, helping them with their fitness journeys. And then I got older. And as I got older, I became more mature. And as I got more involved in personal training, I fell in love with it more and more. And then I hit an interesting point going into CEGEP, where I was enrolled in commerce at Dawson, thinking that business was the trajectory I wanted to go down. However, what I found as I went through my studies, I became less and less engaged in school and more engaged in fitness. So even though the conventional path was to go the educational route, and my father was a university professor, he taught fine arts for 40 years, so I come from a little bit of an academic background, my mother was an art teacher as well, I just felt like the conventional education path wasn't for me. And really the way I assessed that was through listening to my soul, basically, listening to what felt right to me. So the more I pushed towards school, the less it, you know, it pushed back on me. And I just kept going back to training. And eventually what happened was I just dropped out of CEGEP and focused on personal training. And that's really where the journey started to begin.
Okay. And when you dropped out of CEGEP and really started on this path, what kind of challenges came up for you?
Yeah, quite a few challenges. I think we all have ingrained in us this typical construct or path that we have to follow as people of society. You know, go to elementary school, go to high school, get a higher level of education, pursue that to some degree, and then end up getting a job. But the challenge veering off that path was that, you know, primarily coming from my father, not looking at it like it was the right thing to do.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, so that was definitely a challenge because, you know, I think ingrained in all of us, we want to a certain degree, please our parents. So anytime you go against that or defy that, it definitely creates not only inner conflict, but conflict within the relationship.
How did you navigate that?
Well, I navigated it with the support of my mother. My mother was somebody who always supported me in everything that I did. And that was a huge pillar of the equation, having that kind of unconditional support. Because on one end of this of the coin, so to speak, when you're not getting full support, it can definitely be a bit of a challenge. But if on the other end, at least, you have some type of support system or mechanism, it kind of balances things out. I mean, we play so many games in our head and we kind of beat ourselves down and reevaluate things constantly. But having some type of voice that grounds you to help you navigate through those challenging times helps. So that was one of the big ways I got through things, the support of my mother through the process, and just accepting the fact that this was the path that I was going to choose and listening to kind of my soul and my intuition and my heart and going that direction.
Well, for this blog, I think that's incredibly perfect because it takes a lot to actually listen to your soul or your heart or both, and especially when you're coming up against adversity. What kind of qualities do you think it takes from a person or for you to actually be able to listen and follow through?
That's a great question. I mean, I think so many of us are caught up in the day-to-day general living of life, caught in the hamster wheel, so to speak, of the habitual routines. And I think when you get caught in that, you gravitate further away from listening to your heart and listening to your intuition. And eventually you become trapped in a cycle of being disconnected from your heart. And what I've kind of found over the years, especially in the last couple of years, and especially in the last couple of weeks, actually, is that, you know, the heart, and they've shown this in the research, is like a second brain. We've heard of the brain, obviously, and then the gut-brain connection, but there's the heart-brain connection. And I think when you operate from the heart is when you start to dissociate a little bit from the conventional routines and go within versus getting caught up in the external world. But easier said than done. Easier said than done.
I'm so excited that you brought up that research because for my own personal path, I'm working a lot with people and horses and developing different life skills, emotional intelligence, social intelligence. And that's a really integral piece of what I do. And it's so exciting working with horses because they've actually shown that their big hearts, and that's why my blog is called My Horse Heart, their big hearts have an effect positively, physiologically on ours, even if we're not intentionally doing anything, just by being in their vicinity. And I think for me, how I was able to find courage sometimes in following my own path and doing that was finding my horse heart, to be able to find that courage and find that connection there and get out of my head a little bit. So it's super exciting to hear that, you know, that's a little bit part of what you're talking about too.
Yeah, that's amazing. Look, I mean, the research shows a lot of different things, but, you know, every organ and gland has an electromagnetic field. And
yes,
when you interact with people, you know, there's what we believe to be just the interaction of speaking words. But I mean, it goes so much deeper than that. There's really an energetic interaction, and that's not some foo-foo crazy thing. I mean, it's actually science.
It is. It's so exciting. I'm so excited that you know this.
So I know a few things. I have a few tricks up my sleeve.
No doubt. So how do you put that into practice? Like knowing this, how do you have that integrate into your life?
That's a great question. you know, I always try in everything that I do to think deeply about things. One thing I've observed with a lot of people, more specifically with myself, I try and reflect on everything that I do regularly, is that usually human beings operate in a reflexive manner from fear. I mean, there's this preconceived notion that we live in a world of scarcity, and we have this reptilian brain that's all about survival. And what I've seen in myself is that the initial reaction to any situation, especially challenging ones, is to reflexively come from fear and scarcity. Mm-hmm. But the thing to realize is that that's kind of the innate reflex process for your survival needs. Mm-hmm. So I've learned, or I'm learning rather, over time to be able to see that my first reaction to any situation is coming from this place of fear. But if you can step away from that and not make any final decisions right away, eventually your heart will come into the equation if you allow it to do so. So it's giving yourself a little bit of space and equally realizing that your first reaction is not your truest and highest self.
That is fantastic advice and knowledge to put into practice. Do you see that fitness impacts that?
Yeah, I see fitness is actually a very interesting tool. I mean, people that come to my personal training studio to get in shape are there to look better. But what I've found fascinating is that fitness is a tool and a gateway to start conditioning your mind. And people don't realize that when they walk in through the doors. I, of course, know where they're heading once they start their journey. But once you start to move your body physically, you start to engage your mind. And there's that body-mind connection. And through physical movement, it's one of the fastest and best ways to start to take control of your mind in a variety of different ways, from A, disciplining yourself in your mind, and then B, building up self-confidence and resiliency. That comes through physical fitness for sure.
So when you're at your gym and coaching people, do you find that you're talking a lot about mental health and strength and that mind-body connection, as well as, of course, helping them build muscles and their physique in a healthy way?
100%. I mean, everybody's coming there, they think, to work out. What I've kind of seen over the years, and I'm starting to believe, is that people are really there to connect. They might not realize it, but to just connect with another individual, someone through whom they can feel supported, someone through whom they can feel empowered. So, you know, when they're there, things about their life always come to the forefront and surface up, right? Because life affects us and we feel the need inherently to share some of the things that are going on in our life with someone else. And it's an interesting relationship that develops and creates with a trainer. It becomes more than just, you know, a fitness consultant, which is how some people might perceive the job of a trainer. You really are a coach, and a coach is somebody who supports you, empowers you, motivates you, encourages you, guides you. So really, trainers are more than just that. They're really, in a way, psychologists without a license, and coaches who are there to, you know, be by your side.
When you were younger, for instance, when we were in Willingdon, did you ever find yourself taking on a bit of a coaching role with your friends or people in your life? Or did that really come along later?
You know, I can't really recall. I definitely remember being a little bit of kind of a leader. I remember when I played soccer, at one point I was captain of the team. But I don't think at that time I really had any leadership qualities. So, I don't think at that time when I was that young I was taking on that kind of role.
When was the turning point? Like, can you pinpoint a moment in time in everything you've been talking about where you really felt like you were comfortable stepping into a leadership position?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm trying to think here. I can't pinpoint when it started, but what I can say is that under periods of extreme stress, you have two directions you can move in. One, you can fold like a house of cards, or two, you can step up and take control of the situation. So I think stressful situations in life lend themselves to giving you the opportunity to become a leader. So for myself, especially when starting my business, there were a lot of challenges there that pushed me to take control of the situation and to be a leader, which doesn't always mean leading people. I mean, being a leader first and foremost starts with leading yourself and maintaining composure and maintaining a strong mindset to be able to overcome any and all obstacles.
Mm-hmm. Would there be any example you might be willing to share with our listeners of a moment that you had that two pathway option and you chose the opportunity to grow?
Yeah, let me think of something that could be good.
Sure, take your time.
Something that where I had the two path option. Well, I'll make as a general kind of comment. There were a couple times during the growth of my business where there were challenges in terms of growing the business, renovations, building the team, and there were high levels of stress and periods of stress. And I definitely found my mind contemplating scenarios of retraction versus growth. So questioning, you know, what's the point of doing this, going through all this stress, trying to build this out, it's not enjoyable. But there always was something in myself that knew and realized that from stress comes self-evolution. And the interesting thing with stress that I've learned over the years, it's the thing that none of us want. Nobody wants stress, nobody wants pain, everybody wants pleasure and easy street. But the paradox I've learned of it all is the thing that we want is actually not what we need. And therein lies the kind of mystery of life as well. Everyone wants this perfect life where they can kick up their feet and do nothing. But if that was the route that we went, we wouldn't evolve physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So stress and problems are the gateway into A, self-discovery, and B, becoming that stronger, better, and happier version of yourself. You might not always see it in the moment. Yeah. And even to this day, when I go through stress, you're questioning, what's the point of this? Why are you doing this? Which is normal. That's the fear response. That's the reptilian brain. But every time you get through a stressful situation, you emerge on the other side a stronger, better, and happier person. But it's always tough in the moment to realize that that's going to be the outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with what you said more. In those moments where it's really hard to transition out of the reptilian brain, as you're referring to, how do you transition? How do you get to the place of accepting a growth opportunity?
Yeah, when you get into that mindset, it's hard to break it because it's a pattern that I believe is, you know, genetically ingrained in us as human beings, as a species, as an evolutionary mechanism to be able to just live from one day to the next. But when you get in that state, I mean, a couple ways to get out of it. First of all, it's not internalizing the emotions. I mean, I think we're, you know, in our culture, we believe that it's not necessarily a good thing or to discuss your emotions and to share your emotions. Although I would say now in the last couple of years, that's changing a little bit. But for the most part, I think we've been trained to internalize and bottle up a lot of the emotions. So the first thing is to get it out of your system. And there are a variety of different ways to do that. One for me has always been working out, which is more of a, you know, physical way to release stress and to work through problems. So any type of physical activity is a gateway to be able to work through those challenges. Also talking to somebody, talking to a friend, talking to a loved one, talking to a parent, etc. Just, you know, vocalizing what you're going through to take it from inside of you to move it into the outside of you, where you can begin to dissect it a little bit and to detoxify it a little bit.
That's amazing that you're able to do that. And I work on my own similar ways to detox as well. Hopefully our listeners can get a little inspiration from that, because that's so hard when you get stuck in that pattern of self-talk and getting into that stress. It's really important to have as many tools in our toolbox as possible to help us get out of it. So that's great.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, we have, I believe, 60 or 70,000 thoughts a day, and the majority of them are negative. And the more you think in a negative way, the more you reinforce those negative thought patterns. And in neurophysiology, you know, they say the way that nerve cells fire together, wire together. And the more you do that, the thicker those neurological connections become. So it becomes, yes, a challenge to unwind all of that when your pattern is to do one thing. It's kind of like if you're right-handed. You know, you're always going to write with your right hand. To become left-handed, all of a sudden, you know, it doesn't just happen overnight. You know, mm-hmm. there are people that I was reading some research one time about, you know, switching up brushing your teeth with the other hand. And if you do that long enough, you can, you know, wire your brain to be able to have that skill, but it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. So when it comes to negative thought patterns, we all have them and we all can unwind them. But step number one to be able to fix anything is to become aware that there is an issue or a problem, so to speak. And then once through awareness, to actually want to do something about it. I was just talking to someone the other day, and they were discussing with me the different phases of mastery. And I think that, you know, it's important to discuss this. There are four different phases of mastering anything. The first phase is where you're in the unconscious incompetent, where you don't know that you don't know. And most people are in this state where we're running patterns neurologically and reflexively that we're trapped in, and we don't even know it. We're a victim of reality. If you can manage to get out of that and have some awareness, you move into the next state, which is the conscious incompetent, where you're aware that something's up, but you don't know exactly what's going on. And that's the stage I think that all of us need to try and get to have this awareness that there are things that we don't know, and to have this awareness that there are things that are negatively hindering us and affecting us, and that we need to be able to explore that as human beings to be able to evolve ourselves to feel better and to grow as individuals, as well as to contribute beyond ourselves within society.
For sure. That's great. That's really great. I'm taking that in and taking it to heart. So you clearly have a lot of varied knowledge. This is not just fitness. What other teachers or instructors or inspirational figures have you had in your life to kind of guide you in this direction?
Quite a lot. A lot of them digital, but
yeah. What a great thing, eh? An amazing aspect of our times.
Totally. I mean, in today's day and age, if you want to go and learn something, the internet allows you to learn whatever it is you want. I mean, YouTube, you can find pretty much anything for free. You don't even have to pay anything. I mean, it's just there at your fingertips. I would say the foundation of kind of my development in a lot of these different areas came from my mother. My mother is a very special lady, not just because she's my mother. She was, you know, she's somebody who has always been into health and wellness, but not just that, into spirituality, psychology. She's a psychotherapist. She's an art therapist. So I grew up in a household, like I said, where my father was a professor at Concordia in sculpture and art. And my mother was an art teacher and an art therapist. So I grew up in a little bit of an environment where it was all about art and the mind and creativity. And then from my mother's angle, a lot about psychology, introspection, and spirituality. So my household really laid the foundation for my interest and affinity into a lot of these different things. So that's kind of where it all started.
Fantastic. Where do you see Miles Fitness, or simply and not simply Miles Kroll, in the future, in the next 5 or 10 years?
Yeah, I see Miles Fit, you know, the studio side of things, the gym side of things, evolving in terms of being able to offer a better quality service to our clients and more deeply connect with people's needs. Right now, you know, we use physical fitness as the tool to help people, but I really see a vision of building out some infrastructure that allows us to also work a little bit on the psychology of people and more deeply go into the coaching aspect of things, so that us helping people is not just contained within the walls of Miles Fit when we're working with people in those sessions, but to also follow them outside of the studio, giving them digital emotional support in terms of coaching and encouragement, as well as guidance and that type of stuff. So that's kind of where I see the business evolving within Miles Fit. But really where it's going to be going, and this is what I've been working on for a while, is more into the realm of education. I'm a huge fan of offering education, giving workshops, doing lectures, and giving people the tools, strategies, systems, tactics, and resources to really empower them to take control of their lives. So we've done quite a few workshops at Miles Fit over the years, but not in a regular and consistent manner. So part of the, you know, 5-year vision for Miles Fit is to be able to build out a huge educational arm that's not just in-house giving those workshops and lectures, but that's also online, transcending the walls of the studio to be able to help people from anywhere, anybody looking for help with health, fitness, et cetera, to be able to get that help, and having Miles Fit be the platform to do so. So that's kind of where I see things going in the next 5 years. In the next 10 years, to be quite honest with you, with everything with artificial intelligence, virtual reality, augmented reality, neural networks, and machine learning, I can't even begin to predict where we're going to be.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's going to be a totally different world, not just Miles Fit for Miles Fit, but we're going to be living in a different world. And I don't even think we understand where we're going. The human mind has a lot of difficulty wrapping itself around exponential growth. Yes. I mean, the mind thinks linearly, but if you see some of the amazing technology that's coming out now, and every day and every week, it seems like there's some kind of mini breakthrough. I mean, where we're going to be in a decade, I think we're going to be living, truthfully, in a totally different society.
Yes, I agree. And I also cannot even begin to conceptualize what that will look like. But I do feel strongly that people who are doing what you're doing, which is really bringing the humanity into whatever people's field is, really helping people connect to their true selves, to what they need to do in order to have integrity in their life. That is going to be important no matter what. No matter what direction technology takes us, the humanities are really going to be needed. And I'm really excited to see wherever you go in the next 5 years, the next 10 years. I think what you're doing is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I think that health, fitness, taking care of oneself, it's the most important thing. I mean, yes. I think we all live to a certain degree, and we don't even realize it, a self-abusive life where we neglect ourselves for the most part and focus on the external reality, materialism, and superficial things. But, I mean, taking care of yourself is everything. And it's only after you've lost a part of yourself or lost a part of your health that you realize how truly important, you know, these fundamental things are. Yeah. In society, we just gravitate away from that, thinking we need all these things outside of ourselves to define ourselves. But, you know, what we need is actually already there. It's just a matter of realizing that and connecting to that. And, you know, to bring things kind of full circle, connecting to your heart. And I think when you do connect to your heart, you do start to shift away from fear into joy. You shift away from fear into gratitude. And you realize that you actually live in a world of abundance and possibility versus the one that's conventionally portrayed in the media, which would lead you to believe that the world is becoming a scarier and more dangerous place. But I think that's not the case whatsoever. I mean, I think that we live in an amazing time. It's the most exciting and dynamic time in human history. And there's more good stuff going on in the world than ever before. Are there challenges? For sure. There have always been challenges which have shifted and changed over the centuries, depending on the time we live in. But in terms of, I think, as a species, us kind of evolving in our level of consciousness, I see a lot of positive things going on, and I have a lot of faith in humanity and a lot of optimism for the future in terms of how we're going to move forward as a society, especially into this new age that we're heading into with technology, artificial intelligence, and where we're moving.
Yeah, for sure. So for our listeners who live in Montreal or might find themselves in Montreal, how do they find you?
Yeah, so you can find us online at milesfit.com. That's milesfit.com. We're all over social media, very active on Facebook and Instagram. For Facebook, it's Miles Fit. For Instagram, it's Miles Fit. Where else can you find us? I even started up nothing special. I haven't promoted it or anything. Just a little mini podcast, me talking to myself. That can be found online. I think it's actually on iTunes and different platforms. Truthfully, I don't even know how that works, but I know that some stuff is hanging around there as well in audio form.
Excellent.
People who live in the area, they can come by. We're in NDG on Monkland between Hampton and Royal. So I've grown up in NDG my whole life. I wanted to set up my business there. NDG is a great area. I mean, Willingdon was in NDG, which was an awesome school, by the way. We didn't talk much about Willingdon, but I loved Willingdon. I thought it was the best school in the world.
It was amazing. Yes, and NDG. Shout out to NDG, my old stomping ground. Love it to this day.
Yeah, NDG is amazing. I mean, it's changed over the years, and it's become such a great community, a family community with restaurants and just so much happening. And I love NDG. That's why I live there. That's why my business is there. It's a phenomenal area. Not to say that other areas in Montreal are not, but NDG has this certain energy to it, which is what I'm all about, that community energy. Yeah. Very powerful and strong in NDG.
It really is. It really is. And now it also has the incredible Miles Fit aspect to NDG, where we can improve our mental, physical, emotional, heart health. Is there anything?
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'm really glad that you've stuck it out there and that you're contributing to our community there. Even though I don't live there, I still really feel like I'm part of it. And it's really beautiful to hear what you're doing there.
Yeah, every day I get up, I love what I do with Miles Fit. Are there challenging days? Absolutely. Are there supposed to be challenging days? 100%. But I think what's important in life with anything you do is to have a genuine intention behind what you're doing. I love what I do. I love seeing people change. I love seeing people evolve. I love seeing people realize their potential and realize this potential through physical fitness. Human beings have this amazing innate capacity to really be whatever it is they want to be. I know that's a cliched thing, that you can be whatever you want to be, and people say, that's not really the case. Obviously, not everybody can be LeBron James or Usain Bolt. There are certain physiological and physical limitations, but I mean, can everybody become a stronger, happier, healthier version of themselves? Absolutely. And unless you put in the time to cultivate that within yourself, you will always stay in a rut. So fundamentally, what I do at Miles Fit, and you asked, you know, what do you see for Miles Kroll in the years to come? You know, I really see myself as a facilitator of people discovering who they are and really being a catalyst for people becoming that 2.0 version of themselves and tapping into their innate gifts that they're not even aware that they have. And all it takes is, you know, realizing that you have this within you, and that starts with taking on some challenges, like through exercise, setting some goals, starting to achieve those goals, and realizing that there is another level of yourself. And as you climb up the ladder, realizing that there are more and more levels, you know. So when people come into my office and it's so interesting when people come into my office and they sit across from me and they make an appointment for a general consultation, I'm always super pumped up to talk to people because I really am curious to see where they're at in their journey. Are they ready to make the journey? Are they kind of halfway there? Are they scared? Are they excited? Are they skeptical? Are they worried? And I feel it's my responsibility and duty when I'm sitting across from someone to do my best to get through to them, because I have an opportunity in that moment to be able to influence the direction of their life and help them on that journey, which is the journey I believe we all should be going on to find that next part of themselves. So that's always exciting for me to see kind of where people are and be a part of the equation of their life in terms of helping them start their journey through fitness to be able to move towards that next stronger version of themselves.
Amazing. I feel so privileged to be able to do these interviews for such similar reasons as what you just said, partly because I feel like I'm the one sitting across the table from you. I'm learning all new perspectives, even if it's things that I know you're saying in a different way, and I get so much from listening to those who I interview for this podcast. And I feel so privileged to have these people such as yourself willing to talk with me. And maybe, just maybe, there's a chance that someone who's listening will feel that kind of motivation and support through hearing about other people's journeys and going through their own paths, just like yours. I think this is just what you've said today so resonates with me, with what I'm doing, with who I am. And I think it's really helpful for hopefully anyone out there who's listening too. So thank you so much, Miles.
Well, I hope that something resonated with someone, at least one person out there. And I think that what you're doing is amazing, because this podcast, what it fundamentally represents is bringing positivity and growth to people. And stories have been throughout society since, you know, the dawn of time. I mean, chiseling little images inside a cave, to the great Bible and other religious texts. I mean, stories are a big part of the human evolution. And, you know, what you're doing is bringing people on like myself to tell my story, other people telling their stories, you telling your story. But stories, I think, are the perfect medium to get people to be able to listen and to open up their hearts to hearing certain messages. I'm a huge fan of podcasts, and I think what you're doing is phenomenal.
Thank you, Miles. And so much fun.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It is a lot of fun. I mean, everybody has a story to tell, and no one story is better than another story. Everybody has their own unique life that they're living, but there's value in every single journey, no matter how insignificant one might perceive a journey to be, or how grandiose a journey might be perceived to be. The lessons are always there, and the human journey is one that's full of these lessons.
All I can say is exactly. Exactly. Well, on that note, I will thank you again and thank all our listeners who have tuned in. I hope that you had a smile on your face as much as I did for this interview, because it was so inspirational. And I'm wishing everyone just a fabulous day, and hoping that you can find the motivation to be physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually fit, healthy, and courageous to step forth into our paths. Till next time, on My Horse Heart.